Thank you very much, Ms. Ntabo. Maybe before we go to the agenda, can I take this opportunity to welcome all of you here, honorable members, the Fiscal Commission, the Financial Fiscal Commission, and AG. Let's welcome everyone here today, because today we'll be dealing with two fundamental issues. One, the resources at our disposal to pursue the noble cause of a single South Africa, which is at peace with itself, which is prosperous. They will be showing us how this money is allocated and what are the underlying factors. So that as politicians, when we make our opinions, we make them clearly aware of what is possible and what is not possible, and being aware of the challenges. And from the AG's side, they'll be talking with us about their work with regard to minimizing risks or eliminating them in ensuring that all the resources that FFC will be speaking about are safely deployed, are directed to the intended cause, and realize the original target as agreed. It could not have happened at a better time when we are meeting after COVID, when COVID has damaged the economy of our country. Thousands of companies are in the streets, closed. Others are struggling to come back. Because remember, during COVID, economic activities were brought to a standstill, except the essential ones. It meant that revenue streams stopped for companies. It meant those who were creditors, they were not receiving money from their debtors. Those who were selling, they could not sell as to receive money from the customers. So it means the revenue stopped. It depreciated because during COVID, we didn't stop consumption. Stop revenue, but we continued consumption. Stop revenue, at the same time, the debts were not eliminated. So it's an irony of circumstances that complicated our life. That's why I'm calling upon all members that these two presentations are so critical, so that they give us the better and the sound clarity of the environment that we are actually doing our work within. And as usual, I know this committee will not disappoint. I welcome you all and request if there are any apologies, Lindy.
Yes, Chairperson, we have the standing apology of member Ngwenya, who's still not with us due to ill health. So that's the only apologies I have received.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, the agenda is tabled. As you see, can you put it up on the screen?
Hi.
What do they say? Can you share? We're learning the fourth industrial language. The fourth industrial revolution language. There is the agenda, honorable members. Briefing by the Finance and Fiscal Commission. Briefing by AG. And then we are done. I'm tabling the agenda for your adoption, honorable members.
Yes, Chair.
Is that honorable Mvana proposing adoption?
Yes,
honorable members, any second there?
Honorable Bilangulu is seconding.
Thanks, honorable Bilangulu. Thank you very much. So the agenda is adopted, honorable members. And at that point, I shall welcome the Finance and Fiscal Commission, who will introduce themselves and then go on with their presentation. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members. I'm Elspeth Rockman. I'm a part-time commissioner with the FFC since May this year. Allow me to extend the apologies of our acting chairperson of the FFC, Professor Michael Sachs, due to prior commitments today. You would understand that the commission is in a transition period since the passing of our former chairperson, Professor Daniel Plaikis, last month. Now, the FFC is established in terms of Section 220 of the Constitution and functions in terms of the FFC Act. The Commission's focus is primarily on the equitable division of nationally collected revenue amongst the three spheres of government and any other financial and fiscal matters. We appreciate the opportunity to make this presentation today in response to the Honourable Committee's request. In tabling its recommendations for the 21-22 division of revenue during August this year, the FFC reflected on the fact that the COVID-19 pandemic had caused an unprecedented shock to people's livelihoods and had further intensified existing inequalities and condemned many people into poverty and unemployment. The Department of Social Development and its entities were a critical component of government's response to deal with the immediate impact of COVID-19 on all vulnerable sectors of our society. This is a role that the department and its entities may be expected to continue to play at the very least over the next few months. The FFC also acknowledged that South Africa's fiscal framework continued to be characterized by growing debt and negative economic growth even before the onset of COVID-19. The fiscal framework has and will, over the medium term at least, continue to face these challenges. The social development sector will not be immune to the fiscal challenges going forward. It is evident from the 2020 MTBPS indicating that budget allocations to the social development sector is projected to grow by an annual average of 2.1% per annum over the next 3 years. This marginal growth can reasonably be expected to be eroded by inflation. And should the anticipated wage freeze not materialize, the challenge of delivering more with even less will be further escalated. The social development sector will have to critically analyze and assess its expenditure choices, whilst maximizing efficiencies across the board. It is a reality that the sector will face increasing needs.
No, sorry. Two fundamental things, if not three. I must greet you, Liz. I didn't see it yourself.
Oh.
The former MEC from Free State. You are welcome. Good to see you. And honorable members, we've also were supposed to have to extend our condolences to the late Professor Ganges.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, but what we want to request is that, can you share your presentation?
Yes, I'm just making opening remarks, and then
you will share.
Presenters will share the presentation.
I'm
and take over Lisa. From there.
I'm greet you, Liz, again. I haven't seen you for a long time. Thank you. Proceed.
Thank okay. you. It's like a mini reunion, yes.
okay.
Thank you. I was saying the social development sector will have to critically analyze and assess its expenditure choices whilst maximizing efficiencies across the board. It's a reality that the sector will have increasing needs and demands that will have to be met within the confines of an effectively shrinking fiscal envelope. And we must, of course, equally recognize the intrinsic link that must of necessity exist between economic growth, not only to sustain and expand the coverage of the social security system, but also to practically move people out of poverty and unemployment in a sustainable manner. While the road ahead will undoubtedly be difficult, we remain convinced that these challenges are not insurmountable. Honorable Chair, our presentation is structured as follows. We look at social development in the context of the current socioeconomic context. Then we go to the departmental analysis, which provides an overview of the department and its programs, an analysis of, of the welfare services, policy development and implementation support program. We look at the ECD conditional grants, including our recent research and recommendations on the ECD. Analysis of the social assistance program, the NDIA expenditure patterns in support to civil society organizations, the implications of the MTBD.
Let's go. Let's have it on the screen.
Okay. Now, Ms. Sasha Peters will take us through the first part of the presentation.
Let's have it on the screen, because as you walk alone now, we don't see what you're walking through.
No, I'm just giving the structure, and then they will flag now, and then they will take over.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Proceed.
Okay.
All right.
Sasha,
no, sorry.
Can you flag then the presentation and start dealing with it, and then Tandu Ngozo will deal with the next part of the presentation. We have our senior team of researchers with us in this meeting today. Sasha, thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioner Rockman, and good morning, Chair, members of the committee and other colleagues. Chair, if we may just request that we be allowed the right to share the screen, because right now we are unable to.
Is it Sasha?
Yes.
It's
for either Sianda or for Sabelo. If you may just grant them the rights to share the screen, please.
Okay, I've only shared through you. I didn't know about them. Okay. Who else is? Siabonga?
Sianda or Sabelo.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ian. I gave it to Sianda Jones,
that's right, yes. Sianda, please, may you upload the slide? Okay, thank you, Commissioner Rockman, for the introduction. And again, good morning to all. The next two slides provide a bit of context in terms of the demand drivers that underpin the need for the services delivered by the Department of Social Development. So if we move to slide 6, please, Sianda. Okay, so we know that when it comes to the services rendered by the Department of Social Development and its 9 provincial counterparts, the primary targets are the poor and vulnerable sectors of the community, specifically your children, youth, families, older people, people with disabilities, and those living with HIV and AIDS. And the table on that slide just provides a sense of the total number of people that fall within some of those target demographics and which of the provinces they are likely to require greater state intervention or services from this department. So those are the sense of the demographic indicators. And the next slide, slide 7, just provides a sense of selected poverty-related indicators by province. And the reason that these indicators are important is because they too serve to heighten the demand for services by government, but also specifically from the services delivered by this department. So for example, unemployment and just general economic decline increases the need for this department to fulfill its role of providing a safety net for the poor and vulnerable in society. And as the Chair and Commissioner Rockman indicated, we know that over the past few months, with the onset of the coronavirus pandemic and the associated lockdown, where the livelihoods and income of many people were either temporarily or permanently lost, the role of this department really came to the fore. Chair, as we move to the next part of the presentation, I will take you through the first two sections of our analysis, which focuses first on an overview, high-level overview of the Department of Social Development's budget and some of the key programs, notably Program 4, and focusing in a bit more detail on ECD. And then my colleague Tanda will focus on social assistance and the MDA. So please, may we move to the next slide, slide 9. So the purpose of the Department of Social Development, or DSD, is to ensure protection against vulnerability by creating an enabling environment for the provision of comprehensive, integrated, and sustainable social development services. And in managing and reporting on its programs and activities, the department's budget is divided into 5 programs. And these programs and their focus areas are listed in the table on that slide. So first we have the administration program, and we know that the expenditure related to the ministry and other departmental support services such as finance, corporate management, etc., sits under that program. Then programs 2 and 3 relate to social assistance or social security grants function of the department. Program 2 specifically is the social assistance program, where the funding of the different social security grants are located, whilst program 3 is the social security policy and administration program, which focuses more on the policy and administrative aspects related to social assistance. Program 4 is the welfare services policy development and implementation support program. And this program focuses on developmental social welfare services. So those services focused on the well-being of children, families, trying to mitigate the effects of substance abuse, issues like victim empowerment, etc. And then the final program, the program 5, is the social policy and integrated service delivery program. And this program has more focus on community development initiatives and a specific focus on non-profit organizations, or NPOs, which are a key service delivery arm in this sector. Moving to the next slide, please. So this slide and the table on it provides a sense of the allocations to the Department of Social Development over a 7-year period, starting from 2016-17, and then giving a sense of what is to come over the up until 2022-23. But as of 2019-20, which is the focus of the committee's meeting today, the department received an allocation amounting to 184.7 billion. And this allocation represents an increase of 7% when you compare it to what was received during 2018-19. And if we look at that 2019-20 column, we see that the program receiving the largest allocation is the social assistance program, which receives 175.2 billion in 2019-20. And the smallest program is the administration program, which records an allocation of 403 million for the 2019-20 financial year. If we look at the growth rates, which are tabled at the bottom section of that table, and focusing specifically on growth between 2018-19 and 2019-20, we see the biggest grower is the administration program, which grows by 12.1% during the 2019-20 financial year. And the program illustrating the largest decline is your welfare services policy development and implementation support. So that's program that is responsible for the developmental social welfare services. If we move to slide 11, this slide indicates the shares of the total social development budget that is consumed by the 5 budget programs. So the previous slide alluded to the dominance of the social assistance program in RAND terms. And this slide just illustrates really how dominant this program is. If you look at the bars, the social assistance program is allocated 95% of the total social development budget. So it's the main program on the budget, and together with program 3, which also has a focus on social security grant policy administration, that area consumes around 99% of the budget. All other programs, the remaining 1% is split across all the other programs. So you'll see the welfare services policy development and implementation support gets 0.6% of the budget, and then both the administration and social policy and integrated service delivery programs are allocated 0.2% of the total budget allocated to this department.
Who is messing us up now? Sorry. Hold on, Saja. Can somebody mute, please? Proceed, Saja.
Thank you, Chair. So this slide 12, illustrates the spending performance of the five budget programs for 2018-19 and 2019-20. So 2018-19 is the blue bar there, and 2019-20 is represented by the red bar. And the way that we calculate spending performance is to look at the amount allocated or appropriated to each program relative to what was then eventually spent. And the last, if we look at the last two bars on that, in that figure, they illustrate overall spending performance of the department. So we can see that in 2018-19, the department basically spent its whole budget, 99.9%. And in 2019-20, an overexpenditure has been recorded, and that overexpenditure amounts to 8.1%. And if we look at the other bars in that figure, which reflects the spending performance of the budget programs, we can see that the driver of that overexpenditure was the social assistance program. And according to the annual report, this overexpenditure was the result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the state of disaster that was declared in March 2020. At that point, the South African Social Security Agency announced that the social grants payable on the 1st of April 2020 would be paid on the 30th of March 2020. So technically then the payment must reflect in the annual financial statements of 2019-20. So that is why it's recorded as an overexpenditure. Then the program which illustrates the lowest level of spending relative to its allocated budget is the Welfare Services Policy Development and Implementation Support Program, which again is that important program that focuses on developmental social welfare services. As we can see, relative to 2018-19, 98.3% of that program's budget was spent. But as of 2019-20, only 91% has been spent. And over the remaining slides, we hope to sketch the composition of some of these programs and their sub-programs, as well as the factors affecting the spending that we're seeing. So if we move to the next slide, we now dig a bit deeper into program four, which is the one that is responsible for developmental social welfare services. And this program focuses on policy norms and standards and best practice with respect to developmental social welfare services. And we've tried to hone in on the sub-programs under this program that were highlighted in the committee's letter to us. So as shown in my earlier slide, this program receives only 0.6% of the department's total budget. And then the majority of that 0.6% that gets allocated to this program is again allocated in respect of the children sub-program. So as of 2019-20, if you look at the figure on the left, 58.4% of resources in Program 4 was allocated in respect of the children's sub-program. And, you know, if this the dominance of this sub-program reflects, yes, the priority attached to the well-being of children, and it also reflects the funding received by the department in respect of the early childhood development or ECD conditional grant. So the conditional grant, the ECD conditional grant sits under program 4 and within sub-program 4, which is on the figure on the left, it's the children's sub-program. The other sub-programs under program 4, which is of interest to the committee, is the Social Crime Prevention and Victim Empowerment Program. And we see that that program was allocated about 16% of the resources allocated to program 4. And then there's also the People with Disabilities sub-program, which is allocated a very small 1.2% of the allocation under this program. We do note that as part of the national macro organization of government, part of the functions of social development related to people with disabilities was transferred from DSD to the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. And this could be what is potentially driving the low proportion of resources allocated to the sub-program. However, when we look back over the previous years, we see that, you know, the level of resources allocated to this sub-program has been consistently low. And then over most of the period, the growth in allocations, if you look at the slide on the, sorry, the figure on the right of that slide, over most of the period reviewed, the growth in allocations to the children's sub-program remains high relative to other sub-programs within program 4. And I think it's important to point out that, you know, given the intention that of shifting the ECD function from social development to basic education, the funding related to ECD, which sits under this program, will then also shift to the Department of Basic Education. And it will then be interesting to see what program prioritization will then be adopted by the department, given that what was driving prioritization in this program is the ECD conditional grant. If we move to the next slide, please. This slide provides a sense of the allocations in RAND terms to the three key sub-programs that we're focusing on, and that's contained in the figure on the left. And then the figure on the right hand side of the slide illustrates the spending performance, so how much of the allocated funds were actually spent. So starting with the figure on the left side of the slide, as I mentioned earlier, the children's sub-program dominates, receiving 605 million in 2019-20. And what is evident between 2018-19 and 2019-20 is that the allocation in respect of social crime and victim empowerment, which is that green bar, increased significantly from 69.9 million in 2018-19. To 164.9 million in 2019-20. But now, when we look at the, if we keep the allocations in mind, but we also just look at the figure on the right-hand side of the slide, the one that shows spending performance, well, we see that the children's sub-program has been basically the entire budget there has been spent. But when we look at those other two sub-programs, and particularly the Social Crime Prevention and Victim Empowerment sub-program, we see that spending performance has declined markedly between 2018-19 and 2019-20. So it's those two last bars in the figure on the right. So in 2018-19, 96.9% of that allocation was spent. But this declined to a very low 57.9% of the budget being spent in 2019-20. So taking the trends in the two figures together, we see that whilst the allocation or budget for the Social Crime Prevention and Victim Empowerment sub-program increased significantly in 2019-20, it was coupled with a significant underspending in 2019-20. So, you know, raising concern around the capacity or ability of the department to absorb increases in allocations. And then also just to point out again that there was a deterioration in spending performance in the People with Disabilities sub-program, where 91.1% of the budget was spent in 2018-19, and this dropped to 89.2% in 2019-20. So just given that those two sub-programs are dealing with very important aspects of the mandate of the department, it's important to ensure that spending is not only efficient, but also that resources are spent effectively. So if we move to slide 15. Thank you. So we also try to look at the achievement of annual targets, and there were aspects where targets were met. For example, in terms of the target of conducting 9 provincial capacity building workshops on the National Plan of Action for Children, the department did well, and 8 were conducted. On other targets, lack of achievement is attributed to aspects such as capacity constraints and the effects of the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic and the associated lockdown, which resulted in a host of delays. Now, for the committee, it is important to consider the allocated budget, the level of spending, and then what was achieved or bought with the money that was spent, and whether that can be considered value for money. From our perspective and our analysis, it is a bit difficult to comment on that, because just if we just take that, look in that table at the first row, the indicator is the number of provincial intersectoral capacity building workshops on the National Plan of Action for Children. The target was to conduct 9 of those workshops. The achievement was 8. So that's not a bad achievement, but you know, what does that mean in terms of improving outputs and outcomes, and for people on the ground that require service delivery? So that is what we need to consider. If we move to the next slide, please. So this slide provides a sense of developments with respect to the Food and Nutrition Security Program. And through this program, which includes nutrition centers, the department provides meals to vulnerable individuals. And it's very positive to note that the department, if we look at what the annual target was with respect to this program, the department has achieved 100% of its target, which related to facilitating the implementation of the National Food and Nutrition Security Plan across the 9 provinces. Similarly, the department had a target of reaching 415 individuals through its feeding programs, and the department overshot that target, and through its feeding programs, it reached 876,000 people. So that's more than double what it intended to achieve. So again, you know, we can conduct the workshops, and we need to know what actually is the value emanating from those processes. And what we need to note on with respect to this particular intervention is that whilst we can comment on the service delivery performance of this program, so you'll see this slide basically contains information on how the department performed in terms of service delivery. The lack of disaggregated financial data did not allow us to do a detailed analysis on the allocation and spending trends related to this program. So we cannot tell you what was allocated and how much of that allocation was spent. So because when we looked at both the estimates of national expenditure as well as the annual report, the data was not as disaggregated as it needed to be for us to conduct that analysis. Moving to the next slide, please. So the next section looks at ECD, and we look at two aspects. First, we provide a sense of the allocations and spending performance of the ECD conditional grant. And secondly, we would like to bring to the committee's attention some recent work that we've done on ECD. If we move to the next slide. So this slide just provides a bit of context in terms of the importance of early learning programs. And we note that ECD is really the foundation where the basis for future academic performance is established. And, you know, if we miss this window of opportunity to provide sound quality ECD, it is much harder and from a public finance point of view, much more costly for children to catch up to their peers later in schooling. So the ECD conditional grant has not been in existence for too long. It was established in 2017-18, and the twin aims of the conditional grant is to improve access to ECD programs for poor children. And secondly, the grant focuses on infrastructure, specifically to ensure that ECD centers have adequate infrastructure. So the conditional grant has two components or two windows through which funding is allocated. If you look at that table at the bottom of the slide, there's the subsidy component. And the key to accessing the subsidy is for ECD centers to be registered. And we need to note that it is quite difficult for ECD centers to get registered, especially for your poorer, non-center-based ECD programs who do not have the money to comply with the requirements of registration. And then the second component is of the conditional grant. On the right-hand side of that table is the infrastructure component. Now, the infrastructure component aims to support ECD providers to meet basic health and safety requirements for registration. So, you know, those ECD programs who do not have resources, that's the funding to assist them to sort of comply with what is needed to register. But if you look at the row at the bottom of that table, you'll see that the infrastructure component only comprises about 10 to 20% of the total ECD allocation. So the dominant part of the conditional grant is that subsidy component, which consumes about 80 to 90% of the total ECD conditional grant allocation. If we please move to the next slide. Thank you. This slide details the allocations and year-on-year growth in the ECD conditional grant by province. And we see that since inception of the conditional grant in 2017-18, a total of 1.4 billion has been allocated through that conditional grant instrument. And in terms of growth, you will see that in the first year from 2017-18, I'm now looking at the last row in that table, which illustrates the year-on-year growth. You'll see that the first year, from 2017-18 to 2018-19, there was quite significant growth of over 50% in terms of what was allocated for that grant. And then, so that was the first year, so we expect to see a bit of a spike, and then we see a sort of leveling out from 2018-19 to 2019-20, where the allocation grew by about 5.6%. And you'll also note that year-on-year growth varies, year-on-year growth varies across the provinces. So you'll see, for example, the Free State allocation grew by 17.6% in 2019-20, whereas the allocation to the Northern Cape declined quite a bit. If we look at the next slide, the table on that slide indicates the spending performance of this conditional grant by province for the 3 years that it's been running. And we note that overall, there's been a consistent improvement in the spending performance of this conditional grant. So you'll see that in 2017-18, only 81.3% was spent, but we kind of expect spending not to be optimal in the first year of when a grant is just established due to teething problems. But we do see improved performance if we look at the next 2 years. So in 2018-19, 93% of the conditional allocation was spent, and then improving to 96% as at 2019-20. When we looked at the annual report and some of the reasons for underspending, they relate to things such as late submission of claims by NPOs, underpayment of ECD centers in some cases. You'll also note that if we look at the column 2019-20, that there is some, while the aggregate spending is at 96%, there is some variation across the provinces, with Free State, Mpumalanga, and Northern Cape recording lower levels of spending performance for 2019-20. Then if we move to the next slide, please. So as Commissioner Rockman indicated at the beginning with the introductory remarks, the FSC makes recommendations to Parliament on an annual basis on a range of financial and fiscal matters. And one of the research areas that we looked at this year was ECD. And we thought we'd take this opportunity to appraise the committee of the work that we've done and which was recently tabled with Parliament. And this slide just summarizes the main findings coming out of our analysis on ECD. And there are basically four aspects that we emphasize. And the first is that the ECD education sector requires the completion of the policy process. It requires the development of legislation. We know that the National Integrated ECD Policy was approved in 2015, but since then, it has not been translated into legislation that outlines clear accountability. And members would know that government departments operate according to legal mandates. So there is a need for legislation in the sector to be finalized. And we think it's particularly important since responsibility for ECD is spread not only across different departments, but also all three spheres of government. But then the second issue we'd like to highlight is the need for not only more, but better targeted funding. So whilst we've seen improvements in the level of funding that ECD is allocated, when we look at ECD relative to other forms of education, such as your basic education or higher education, ECD receives a very small 1.6% of total education spending. So we need greater prioritization of funding towards ECD. Then members would know there are two models of ECD provision. Your formal ECD center provision, which includes your grade R classes in formal schools and pre-primary schools. Then you get the non-center-based ECD programs, which are your more non-traditional programs, such as toy libraries, informal play groups, etc. And it is here these non-center-based ECD programs that our poorest and youngest children are attending early learning programs. And our concern is that the funds or subsidies that are allocated through the department are being allocated mostly to your formal ECD centers. So the available money is not going to where the need is greatest. And as I alluded to when I presented on the conditional grant, mainly your non-center-based ECD programs, they face quite a challenge because in order to be able to receive or to be eligible to receive government funding, they must be registered. But in order to register, they need to meet certain requirements, right? And they generally lack the funding required to comply. So these are the programs that require the funding the most, but which are unable to access it. We know that that ECD conditional grant has that infrastructure component, but as you saw in the on the slide, that infrastructure component only accounts for about 10 to 20% of the entire conditional grant. So it's a small amount and it's not reaching all that need assistance. Then the third challenge is a data related one, and the sector does not have a robust data system that contains the number of registered and funded ECD programs and the number of children accessing them. There's also no data on the quality of ECD programs being provided. And as members would appreciate, to enable informed, sound decision making, you need credible and reliable data. Then finally, the fourth challenge that we wanted to emphasize relates to ECD teachers. And the main predictor of quality for an ECD program is the quality of the teacher-child interactions. And currently, it's estimated that under 40% of ECD teachers have an ECD qualification. And this needs to be improved. There is a need for training and the establishment of a professional development path for ECD teachers. Then slide 22 just shows the list there for members' perusal, the recommendations that we made to Parliament. Members can go through it, but it just relates to the need for a nationwide audit of ECD services to be conducted, for funding to ECD to be not only strengthened, more prioritized, but also better targeted. And members may go through the other recommendations, but for now, Chair, I'd like to hand over to Thando, who will take us through the last part of the presentation.
Thank you so much, Sasha, and good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I will take you through the last three sections of our presentation. So starting with the social assistance program, we'll briefly look at one of the entities the department, the NDA, and then we will look at the implication of the MTBPS on the department's budget. So starting off with the social assistance program, my colleague Sasha has already alluded to the importance of this program in terms of resource allocation. So just to emphasize the point that it consumes about 94.8% of the department's budget. So it's a very large program, rightly so because of its importance. So the other point that we're making then is that the total social assistance grants also, not only is it big, but it also show substantial growth. Growth that are even, higher than the inflation rate. For instance, if we look at the second largest grant, the old age grant, it shows that it grew by 9.9% in 2017-18, and then 10% in 2018-19, and then 9.1% in 2019-20. So these are substantial growth that are above even inflation to show that this program is growing substantially. And it is also driven to a certain extent by, the increasing number of the beneficiaries, as we're going to see in the next slide. But we do note that the war veterans grant show a downward trend. It decreased by 19.8% in 2017-18 and 22.9% in 2018-19. And the decreases, as far as we've seen in our analysis, is that it is mainly driven by the fact that the number of beneficiaries have declined. They declined from 132 in 2017-18 to 62 in 2019-20. So that could likely explain, therefore, the downward trend in its growth. Next slide. So this slide then shows, it speaks to the fact that the disaggregation of the grants show that the child support grant is the biggest with 12.8 million beneficiaries. It is followed by the old age grants, which has 3.7 million beneficiaries, and therefore the last followed by the disability grant, which has over 1 million beneficiaries. Just to make the point that the large chunk of beneficiaries, which account for about two thirds, goes to the child support grant. So the child support grant is the biggest. And the other point that we're making is that the number of beneficiaries have increased. For instance, from 17.8 million in 2018-19 to 18.3 million as in March 2020. So just to emphasize the point that I've already made, that the beneficiaries are increasing, and that is also driving the resource allocation to this program. And lastly, just to in terms of the provincial distribution, we see that about 25% of the beneficiaries are in KZN, and followed by Eastern Cape, which has about 2.9 million, and then Gauteng with about 2.8 million beneficiaries. When we further analyze these statistics, we see that they mirror what's happening is that the social grant beneficiaries also mirror the poverty trends. If you look at the provincial distribution of poverty, so what that means is that those provinces that have higher rates of poverty also have a higher number of beneficiaries. Next slide. So this slide then is on the spending performance. Looking at the period between 2018-19 and 2019-20. So what we note is that there has been an overspending of 8.6% for 2019-20, and it seems to have been driven by the growth in the beneficiaries, as I've already alluded to that fact, from 17 million at the end of financial year in 2019. To about 18 million in 2020 by the end of the financial year at 2020, March 2020, showing an increase of 2.7% in the number of beneficiaries. So that could have led also to the overspending that we see. Also, but the old age grant and the child support grant show an overspending of 8.5% and 8.8% respectively. For 1920, so there is that trend that is seems to be prevalent of overspending, primarily driven by the number of beneficiaries. But we also note that with regard to the social relief of distress, we see that there has been an underspending of 1.8% in 2019-20. So as the Commission, we are concerned about the overspending as well as the underspending, because it reflects inefficiencies in spending, and that we think is does not augur well for a department that is entrusted with such a responsibility of the social welfare and coverage. So we just make the point that whether it's underspending or overspending, the Commission is really concerned by the fact that it's reflective of inefficiencies in spending. So next slide. So when we're coming to now the key challenges in social assistance, we've categorized them into three. They are administrative issues, implementation issues, and sustainability issues. So with regards to the administrative issues, we see that the system is fragmented and is marred by administrative bottlenecks and implementation inefficiencies that speak to its various components. And therefore, because of that, the system is not operating smoothly. There is a lack of integration, for instance, between the cash transfer, social services, and grant application procedures, which manifests itself in the frustration that are faced and confronted by the beneficiaries when they decide to access the grants. With regard to the implementation issues, we note that the issues of corruption, fraud, and mismanagement that seems to dominate the social assistance payments. For instance, we note that the adoption of biometric identification and electronic payment in 2012 resulted in a process of re-registering grant beneficiaries. And what happened there is that over 600,000 fraudulent social grant recipients were removed from the system. So that shows that the issues of corruption and fraud and mismanagement were really prevalent. If such a high number of fraudulent recipients were discovered and then removed from the system. Secondly, that the beneficiaries have experienced unauthorized deductions from their accounts, which in itself is not a legal thing. It's not something that should happen. So that speaks to the second aspect of the implementation issues that we have identified. So lastly, we looked at sustainability issues. The point that we are making is that there's been this phenomenal growth in the number of recipients. For instance, in 1994, there were only 2.9 million recipients, but this number has grown to 18.3 million over the time, so from 1994 to what we have currently. So this then tells us that there is this phenomenal growth of beneficiaries in a context where the economy is not doing well. As the chairperson alluded, even the COVID-19 situation has exacerbated the situation when it comes to economic growth, because it will affect our economic growth. So this increase in the number of beneficiaries may not be financially sustainable going forward. Next slide. So now we're going to look at one of the entities of the department, the National Development Agency. We're going to look at the expenditure patterns and in as far as it supports the civil society organization. Next slide. So we start off by briefly articulating the mandate, to say that the mandate of the NDA is to contribute towards the eradication of poverty through supporting CSOs by funding them to implement development projects in peer communities and strengthening their institutional capacity. So that's the key mandate of the NDA. But what we've seen is that in that mandate, what seems to be the key program to us is the CSO development program, which provides a comprehensive package aimed at fully developing CSOs to ensure that their capabilities to provide quality services to their communities are enhanced. But we've noted also that with regards to this program, the key thing was also for it to contribute to job creation. But in as far as the situation as it stands now, the NDA income generation project funding model seem not to be succeeding in creating sustainable jobs, especially for the youth, because we know that when it comes to unemployment, the youth are the most affected. But the program seem not to reach the youth when it comes to the creation of sustainable jobs. Now, the graph that is shown at the top of that slide, it shows the total expenditure of NDA covering the period from 2015-16 to 2021-22, which is the period that's covering partly the MTEF period. So what we note there is that the department's overall budget, the entity's overall budget has increased, as you see that those blue graphs. If you look at the graph carefully, you'll see that from 2021-22 and 22-23,
the crafts have been increasing, you know, reflecting the fact that there is growth in terms of resource allocation to the entity. So we see that, for instance, the budget increase from the 215.5 million in 2019-20 to 248.4 million in 2022-23, and that reflects an annual growth rate of 4.9% after an average annual rate of negative 0.8%. So there has, going forward, there will be an increase in the budget of the entity. Next slide. So if we look at now digging deeper into the specific programs of the NDA, we see that there are basically three programs within NDA. But what seems to be the case is that there is a domination of the two programs, which is governance and administration and the CSO development. Those two seems to be dominant, and then the research and development program seem to be very tiny. If you look at the graph at the top of the page there, so the blue graph represents governance and administration allocation, and then the red graph represents the allocation to the CSO development program. So what we note there is that with regard to spending on the research and development program, it increased by 24.4% in between 2016-17 and 2019-20, while the CSO program declined by 3% over the same period. But if you look at the administration program, it was stagnant, so there was no movement, there was no growth or no contraction in that particular program. But if you look at the period between 2019-20 and 2022-23, you see that the spending on the research and development program will grow by 4.9% over the period, while the administration program will grow by 5.3%. The CSO development program will grow by 4.4% over the period. So we see that there will be some growth after what seemed to be a contraction and stagnation of the other two programs. We see that now they going forward they will experience some growth, you know, just like we've seen in the overall expenditure of the entity, that there is growth going forward in terms of resource allocation to the entity. So there's the second point that we're making then is with regards to the fact that the CSO development program accounts for 51.6% of the NDA total expenditure for the period between 2016-17 and 2019-20. If you look at the other programs, the administration program, it accounted for 45.2%. The research and development program accounted for 3.2%. So we see that for the period between 2016-17 and 2019-20, the most important program for the entity was the CSO development program. And we think that rightly so, because that program seems to us to be critical in the mandate of the entity. But we see a slightly different picture when we look at the period between 2019-20 and 2022-23, because what happens then is that the administration program then accounts for 48.8% of the entity's total expenditure. The CSO development program accounts for 46.8%, while the research and development program accounts for 4.4%. So what seems to be happening then going forward is that the administration program seems to be now more important in expenditure terms when you compare it to the CSO development program. And we it's a little concern to us, because we think that we should be seeing the CSO development program being the most important program, given its importance in the mandate of the entity. But it seems to have been overtaken by the administration program over this period. Next slide. Now, when we now look at the economic classification of the expenditure plans within NDA, what's worth noting is that spending on compensation of employees has always dominated the budget of the entity. For instance, in the period between 2016 and 17 and 2019-20, we see that it increased by 1%, while the spending on goods and services declined by 9.5%, and the resource allocation to transfers and subsidies decreased by a massive 31.5% during that period. Even if you look at the period between 2019-20 and 2022-23, we see that the spending on compensation of employees continues to increase by 4.6%, and the goods and services by 4.3%, whereas transfers and services increased by 11.3%. So the growth if you look at the growth over this the period, you see that the spending on compensation of employees continue to increase even more substantially going forward. And when now you look at the compensation of employees accounts for more than half of the entity's total expenditure, which is 51.9%, making it a very important aspect of their budget. And if you look at the other programs, you see that goods and services, for instance, accounts for 40.1%, and then transfers and services just a tiny 7.2 between 2016-17 and 2019-20. And if you continue to look at the trends now, looking at the period between 2019-20 and 2022-23, we see that the compensation of employees continues to dominate the budget of the entity. And what the point that we're making there is that the compensation of employee budget is growing in its importance. It almost accounts for two-thirds of the entity's total expenditure. Then that to us, the concern there is that it has the potential of crowding out then other spending items if it is taking such a large chunk of the entity's budget. And we allude to the fact that given what's been announced by the 2020 MTBPS with regards to the public wage bill, the reductions that are going to be experienced when it comes to public wage bill, this could affect the NDA disproportionately because it has such a large fraction of its budget allocated to the compensation of employees. Next slide. So looking now at the budget performance of the programs, we note that the underspending on the CSO development program, which in our view is the critical program for the entity, remains very high, because we see that even though it decreased from 9.6 million in 2018-19 to 4.3 million in 2019-20, it remains very, very high if you compare it with the other programs. The research and development program underspending marginally decreased from 2.2 million to 2.1 million from 2018-19 to 2019-20. But also there was a significant decrease in underspending for the governance and administration program from 9 million to 1.2 million in 2019-20. So the point we want to make there is that, like we said before, whether it's underspending or overspending, we were always concerned about the spending efficiency in whatever the case may be. So the second point that we want to make is that the NDA has met all its performance indicators if you look at the year 2019-20. However, the target on the number of CSOs capacitated in civil society or organizational management per year That one was not met. The planned target was for 5,500 organizations to be covered, but the actual achievement was that only 5,263 were covered, reflecting an underachievement of 237 organizations that were not covered. So we just a note that in that particular target was not met. Next slide. So now we're going to look at the impact of the 2020 MTPS on the department's budget. Next slide. So this slide shows we have three columns on the right hand side of the slide. So we have downward revisions, and then we have reallocations, and then we have what the impact was in terms of the net change. So with regards to social assistance grants, we note that the amount available in the current financial year is due to early payments of social grants for April 2019, and then there was an additional allocation of 40.9 to cover social assistance grants, including the 15.4 billion that was already in the baseline, but also money that was going to be used to top up various grants for a limited time, as it was announced by the president, and also to provide a special COVID-19 social relief of distress for a grant of 350 for each person covering a period of 6 months. When it comes to ECD grants, there was a suspension of the infrastructure grant component due to the postponement of a plant center upgrade for a year. And with regards to goods and services, there was a suspension from several goods and services items. For instance, things like consultants, venues, training and development, catering, and so forth. That was so that was reallocated from those. So the allocation also was then used for the procurement of PPE for the department facilities and the community nutrition development centers. With regards to the welfare services policy development and implementation support, there was a shift of compensation of employees. Shift to cover the commission of employees to hire 1,809 social workers, as the president announced, to provide psychological services to affected people during the pandemic, and the social workers to be paid that will be paid a stipend of 6,000 per month for 3 months. So that is just a summary of how the MTPS 20 MTPS has affected the budgets the department's budget. Next slide. So in this slide, we just show what has happened to the different program across the government, and how the 2020 MTPS has affected them. But what's worth noting, if you look at that graph on the left side of the slide, is the fact that the highest growing aspect is the debt service cost, because of the amount of money that we are borrowing as a country, because of the fiscal deficit that we have, given the expenditure that has increased because of COVID-19 and the decline in our revenues. We see that there is a growth of 16.1 when it comes to debt service costs, and then our concern there is that the service cost seems now to be crowding out spending on service delivery. For instance, when it comes to social development sector, we see that the sector is only growing by 2.1 over the next 3 years, and this is a sector that is important in terms of protecting people from poverty. And it's only growing by 2.1 because there is that phenomenal growth in the debt service cost. So we see that an additional 6.8 billion was allocated to the department to extend the COVID-19 social relief fund, as we've already noted, and that the sector will receive a further 588.7 million through the presidential employment interventions. And over the MTF period, the one thing to note is that the responsibility of the ECD will be transferred to the basic education sector. So in summary, that's the impact that the MTBS 2020 has had on the budget of the department. Next slide. So in conclusion, therefore we as a commission, we commend the effectiveness of the South African social security system, because it has made a significant difference in terms of protecting poor households. So as an anti-poverty measure and social assistance, it has contributed significantly towards the mitigation of poverty. So we think that given that kind of success that it has had, it should be expanded to cover other aspects of aspects that are not currently covered now. But that will suffer from vulnerabilities that they face in the communities. So we think that it will be a good thing for government to look at how it can be expanded to cover more people that are vulnerable to poverty and other vulnerabilities that they experience in communities. But however, I want to balance that with the fact that we've already alluded to the fact that the numbers are growing substantially, and that in the context where the economy is not doing well, that may create then the question of sustainability. How do you sustain the program going forward? But we think that a balance could be struck between the two, so that the program is able to cover more people. The second thing that we want to highlight is the fact that the administrative and implementation challenges that we spoke about earlier on must be addressed, so that we can ensure that there is value for money going forward. And if you want to cover more people, it will be important that the money that we use on this program, it goes to what it is intended for, instead of being wasted in administrative and implementation glitches. So the last point that we want to make is that the people with disability and social crime prevention and victim empowerment program, that program should focus on some of the most vulnerable people, such as the department needs to improve the effectiveness and efficiency of spending, which was poor in 2019-2020. So what we saw was that the effectiveness and efficiency of spending, as we saw earlier on, there was some underspending, there was some overspending in some instances. We are saying that we should improve that if we are to cover people that are most vulnerable in our society. Next slide. So the commission then requests the committee to note its recommendation in relation to the ECD, as Sasha was explaining earlier on, and the gaps that characterize the provision of funding and services in this sector. Also, the commission advises the committee to monitor the shifting of ECD services from social development to basic education, paying particular attention to a smooth transition that will ensure that there is minimal disruption of ECD services, because this also is a critical program of the department. Chairperson, that's the end of our presentation. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yay, please. Thank you, Sianda. That was the longest presentation I have ever come across since I became a chairperson of this portfolio committee. I hope, Sianda, in future. You see, Sianda, am I correct? Was it Tando?
Tando, yes.
So I hope Tando in future We will do our best to have a smaller presentation, but still carry the message. But thank you very much. I usually cut some of those presentations, but I thought we are meeting you for the first time since I came here. It is important to treat guests with dignity and respect. Liz, are you guys done?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I think it's the scope of information also that it's so detailed that the committee must really engage with it. So sometimes more information is better, but it is quite substantial to take in at one go. But let us try to hand back to you.
No, I accept that. Maybe in future we need to request that you lift the key messages that you want to bring us and refer us to the detail that is in the document. But we'll sort that. Honorable members, we still have AG, but let me take questions and comments on this one. Honorable Masango, Honorable Aris, Honorable Tikhang, Honorable Alexander, Honorable Pilangolo. 4 minutes rule. Honorable Masango.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much to the FFC for the presentation this morning. That was quite detailed and very substantive in terms of the clarity that it has given us. I was at some stage nervous because I thought that the chairperson was going to cut the presentation short. But it really helped a lot to clarify also what the committee needs to go out and oversight on, because obviously this was the analysis that we were given is saying that, you know, some good work has been done, but also there was an emphasis on ensuring that, you know, the efficiency can only, from our part as a portfolio committee, I believe that efficiency will be proven on the impact of that efficient spending that has taken place. I just want to also, appreciate the concluding remarks that were made earlier on by Tando, that we need to make sure that those aspects of or those categories of the program that have not received attention, whilst they are very important, actually receive attention going forward, such as in the case of the NDA, the CSO development, and the fact that the youth have not been sort of covered to an extent that one can see a difference in terms of income generation projects. And also in terms of the victim empowerment and the persons with disabilities, that program we cannot afford that program to not get to not receive the attention that it deserves. So, but since one is getting the presentation from the FFC, one would have to actually engage the department on the basis of this presentation. So what one wants to do today is just to really thank the FSC for such an amazingly comprehensive and clarity-giving presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Masango, Honorable Aris.
Good morning, Chair, and I would like to thank the FSC for the presentation. However, there's a number of concerns that is raised. I mean, in terms of the social assistance, it is dominantly, the budget is dominantly the social development budget goes dominantly for social assistance. However, it is worrisome that people are reliant on the social development assistance. And I don't see that there's any developmental plans or projects on how, you know, to get the people exit out of the social development program. It is also worrisome that in terms of the developmental, the indices, that there is no detailed report in terms of that. If you look at slide 16, it is worrisome, and as well as the underspending. In terms of the ECDs, is that how can we ensure that we get, you know, these ECD teachers, get them the necessary qualifications? And then in terms of getting ECDs registered, the stringent conditions, and what can we do to ensure that more ECDs get properly registered so that in order for them to qualify for these grants? And then also in terms of I have also seen in terms of the SRD grants, the underspending, and if maybe, but that's a question for the department, what is the reason for that? Is it due to capacity? And it is also worrisome that there's 600,000 fraudulent social recipients that was removed from the system that have received these grants. And my worry is, how did we recover this money? Will we recover this money? And then I've also noted that many of these grant recipients have these deductions on their social grants. How can we curb that? And can we set a limit to, you know, deductions on these grants? And then only 1.6 of the total education spent on ECD. Is it because ECD specifically in your poor working class areas, if you compare that to the affluent middle class ECDs, they have an advantage. And I think the department need to look at how can we bring synergy into the ECDs and in terms of ECD teachers, learning material, infrastructure, etc. And then in terms of the NDA, are failed decimally. If we look at the unemployment rate in the country and the failure of the NDA to create sustainable youth jobs and the failure to have developmental programs at CNDCs. And again, they must come and answer for us. So what is their plans and how, what is their turnaround strategy? You know, and because the biggest part of the budget go into the compensation of employees, which is 62.3% of the total expenditure. I mean, half of the budget is going to the employees while there's no developmental programs in place. And then I've also noticed that the decline in terms of the war veterans, I think, I don't know, maybe it is, if they can just maybe give us a reason, what is the reason for that decline? And then in terms of slide 11, 7.9% decrease while we have an unemployment rate that is sky high. I mean, in the third quarter, we have seen 52% unemployment rate. And then I'm also worried in terms of slide 13 of disability, that there's really very little has been done for the disability. And then slide 14, 57.9% of social crime prevention empowerment is underspent. And I mean, what's the reason for that?
Thank you. Honorable Aris,
thanks.
Are you done?
Yes, Chair, it is just that slide 34 in terms of the social workers, you know, that 1,809, how many of that people was really employed? I'm done.
Thank you, Abu Dikha.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also join my colleagues by appreciating and welcoming the presentation, which was presented to us by the FFC. And then I've got just three issues which I want to quickly raise, Honorable Chairperson. And then the first one, I would like to find out from the FFC that what are the foreseeable implications on the implementation on key policy directives and strategic goals due to the recorded decline in spending for both the people with disabilities and the social crime prevention and the victim empowerment sub-programs. And then I would also like to find out how can these implications be circumvented for future purposes. And then secondly, I would like to find out how does the lack of development of a policy on provision of counseling affect the spending of Program 4 on welfare services policy development and implementation support. And then lastly, Honorable Chairperson, I would like to find out in what ways the lack of disaggregated data on funding food and nutrition limiting the assessment of the financial performance of the program. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Those are my three questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Dixa. Honorable Alexandra Abrams.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the FFC for their briefing. I, for one, appreciate the in-depth discussion and the content that they've provided, and that it was very, very objective, and it gives us a lot of questions to engage the department and the entities on. Chairperson, I just have two requests and one comment. So in the presentation, you make reference, the FFC makes reference to an ECD research report. I just would like to know if they'll be willing to share that report for us. And then also another request is I would like to know, could the FFC also, in the same way that they've engaged the ECD and the ECD within DSD, if they would not be able to give us a few slides in the same way they've broken it down here, on the status of MPOs and the funding and the budgeting for MPOs over the last few years. And the projection. So that's just the one request with regard to MPOs, they'd be willing to do that. And then lastly, Chair, just my comment, maybe I missed the memo, but if the NDA is supposed to be focusing on supporting CSOs and developing them, are they supposed to be in the business of, you know, creating jobs, at which they've now been reported to have failed to do? So that's just, you know, a question I'll ask to the NDA. Should they not be focusing more on their core mandate and not be in the business of creating jobs themselves? But once again, thank you for the presentation.
Thanks, Honorable Abrams. I'm happy that we know questions that should be referred to NDA. Honorable Kate.
Thank you, Chairperson. and good morning, everybody. Chair, I would like to firstly appreciate and welcome the presentation by the FFC. Chair, my first question is I want to check with FFC as to what are the foreseeable implications on the delays in sourcing in technical support on the shelter services provided by the department. And the second one, Chair, is how is the status of financial and performance management affected by the lack of development of programs such as the community-based disability inclusive development programs? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Pilangolo, Honorable Manganya.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to my colleagues and the commissioners. I have to say the briefing by the FFC, it was thought provoking, and then that thought provoking is when they talk more about people who are reliant to the grant. I want to ask if they didn't have an analysis or analytic that may help the country. Because if everyone is reliant on social grant, it means the way we are now in the country, as we are running short of our economy is down, we don't have, we are indebted. Didn't they come up with something that may assist the country to make sure to reduce people who are reliant and create something so that while we are having this influx, but we are able to direct others to something that they do, they will do and get money. But my second question, Chair, is how is the Commission proposing efficient spending on the social assistance program? What are the foreseeable implications of the growing compensation of employee budget, which is crowding out other spending items of the mandate of the NDA? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Manganya. Honorable Mvana. Nonkosi.
She's struggling with the network.
Can we go to Honorable Mtaung at the moment, in the meantime?
Thank you, Chairperson. And also thanks for the presentation. Comrade Chair, my first question will be in terms of measuring the impact of output, what is the impact on the promotion and protection of the rights of
Network, yeah.
But we can hear you.
Oh, you can hear me. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Chair. My apology about that. In terms of measuring the impact of output, what is the impact on the promotion and protection of the rights of persons with disabilities and the frameworks on disability rights awareness? If the strengthening of the national disability rights machinery is suspended? And then number two, Chair, how does a lack of available disaggregated job creating funding data for analysis mean for the assessment of the impact and financial performance of the NDA on its mandate? And then number three, what are impact of performance management implications on the CSO development program if the target on the number of CSOs capacitated in CSO management per year was not met? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Mtaung, is Honorable Mvana back?
Yes, but I did call. She have connected.
Honorable Mvana? Oh, P. Honorable Mvana, say no.
Chairperson, thank you. Yandiva. Chairperson. The only question that
I will. In the meantime, Liz, can I give you no more than 20 minutes with your team to respond to questions that really are aligned to your work and be able to say those which you cannot deal with? Liz and your team.
Chairperson, Jikaukile, ne?
We can hear you now.
Okay, I was asking Chairperson, what is the overall financial and performance management impact on the administrative implementation and sustainability, Chairperson? Thanks.
Thank you very much. Liz, take your 20 minutes.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have also with us Dr. Kululi Nkube. He will also be coming in to make input on the questions and input received. And then as well as Sasha, Tandu, Sabelu, and Sianda. If I can deal with the overall request, there's a request for the ECD report. We will certainly share what is available in the FFC, including the chapter on ECDs that was part of our annual submission of Division of Revenue. If there's a request for further information, I'm sure the committee can just formalize that request and we can look at the breakdown of further information regarding the NPOs, as the Honorable Member mentioned. Let me ask the presenter, starting with Dr. Mkululi, can you start and then followed by Sasha, Tandu, and deal with as many questions. Many of the questions will actually assist the committee in the engagement with the department and the entities. But let us try to deal with as many of those that we can. Dr. Mkululi, are you in the meeting?
Yes, I'm in the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Briefly touch on a few issues. One of the issues is getting more teachers qualified.
We want to see you, Dr. Mkululi.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. One issue, I think our presentation generally, what we're trying to do is to follow the request as it is and try and touch on every aspect of the request by the committee and also to assist the committee in terms of their oversight function. And as this is our first meeting and we will try to be brief next time, but provide more information for oversight. And on the questions, there was a question, the first question really was about how do we make teachers more qualified and also in terms of ECD teachers. I think the brief answer there is that there's a need to reprioritize that particular area. If there's no capacity, then the output at the end of the day from ECD, which is very important, will be very, very poor. So the issue there is to reprioritize for the department to think about reprioritizing that particular line item, the quality of teachers, which is very important. ECD is important. And if ECD, we fail on ECD, it means even when kids grow up, they will not really succeed. So it's important to reprioritize that particular area. Another area which was mentioned by three members is the issue of data, lack of disaggregated data. And we know that if you have no data, you cannot measure. And if you cannot measure, you cannot manage. And if you cannot manage properly, it means even your output at the end of the day will not be that, will the quality will not be very good. So it's important to have disaggregated data. And disaggregated data is important in the sense that we need to understand who are the beneficiaries in terms of gender, in terms of whether one is disabled or not. So it's important to get disaggregated data in every respect so that we can manage and we can spend effectively the resources. Then the other issue was about the compensation of employees. I think this is a general worry across government departments that compensation of employees has, the budget on compensation of employees has been growing rapidly and growing more than what the economy can take. So the issue there is that
it is now, we see that the conversation of employees is now really crowding out service delivery, and that's not the right thing. So there's a need really to look across government departments and to try and contain conversation of employees so that it doesn't crowd other service delivery. We saw also in our presentation that debt service costs are also one of the biggest growing items, and that is worrying for the Commission because it is actually beginning to crowd out social services, especially education, health, and social development. Then, some of the issues I think my colleagues will chat, but some of the issues are general for the department to answer. This session was to provide largely information which the department will answer. Sasha, please take over and reflect on some of the issues raised.
Thanks, Nkululi. I think just to comment on some of the issues that Honorable Aris raised regarding the poor balance between your social assistance programs and your developmental type programs. It perhaps speaks to the level of poverty in our country, but I think what is a concern for the Commission is that the social development sector has not seemed to really embrace the developmental approach that looks at building the capacity of vulnerable people, and also shifting from an emphasis on statutory interventions, which are very pricey to implement, interventions like your alternative state care, that type of interventions, versus a more proactive approach that identifies at-risk children, at-risk families and communities, that says these are people that are at risk, and let's proactively intervene before abuse happens, before substance abuse becomes an issue, etc. So there is a very big disjunct between, providing straight income support and statutory support versus a more developmental approach. And what I think we would say is that the department needs to look at a better integration between assistance like income support, your social security grants, relative to support provided through your social welfare type programs. There needs to be better integration there so that we give a comprehensive package of social protection. Then also just on the stringent ECD conditions, it is a very big concern because the bulk of your ECD programs that are providing early learning programs to our poor and vulnerable children, they can't afford to comply and to register. So we need to find a way of bringing them into the fold so that they can receive access to funding. And we're not saying don't have any requirements, registration requirements, compliance requirements, but rather let us have a differentiated approach. Because right now your formal ECD programs and your informal ECD programs have to meet the same type of registration requirements. And we don't see this as being a logical way, because the very modality used to provide early learning programs in a formal relative to an informal setting is different. So let's tailor those requirements to those different ways in which early learning programs are delivered. And then just a note on the disaggregated data that prevents analysis. What we mean there is that for some programs, for example, persons with disabilities, there's a specific sub-program in the budget that speaks to that, to that intervention or that suite of programs. So we can look at the allocations and we can analyze it and we can come and tell you what the growth rate is, what the spending performance is. But for I think it was in respect to the food and nutrition program, it was a bit more difficult to, we could not identify which program or sub-program it fell into. So we couldn't tease out the financial allocations and analyze it for the committee. On that one, we had to sort of stick to the service delivery information that was available. For the committee, the best way to analyze things is to have your financial information relative to your service delivery information, so that you can try and judge whether what is being spent or overspent or underspent is consistent with what we're seeing is being delivered. Thank you, Chair. If I can hand over perhaps to Tando or Sabela.
Thank you, Sasha. Most of the questions have been dealt with, and I think most of the comments that were made relate specifically to the department. But one, maybe we'll just add or try and answer the question on NDA and job creation. So what we're saying there is that the mandate of the NDA is to contributes towards job creation. It's not a direct link. They're not directly involved in job creation, but their mandates, speak to the fact that they have to support CSOs by funding them so that CSOs can implement developmental projects. And therefore those projects should be creating jobs. And in the context where the majority of the people, specifically the youth, reside in those communities, poor or rural communities. So those developmental projects should help in creating jobs in those communities and enhance the contribution of NDA to job creation. And as far as we understand it, thank you.
We're done, Liz?
I don't know, maybe my other colleagues would like to add something.
I think we have covered most of the issues. Chairperson, let me also acknowledge we have with us Professor Aubrey Mukadi, who's also a commissioner at the FFC, who joined the meeting. Let me just hand over to him to hear if he wants to make any input. Professor Mukadi? Professor Mukadi, are you still in the meeting? There might be a connectivity issue also with Prof. Mukadi. But I think, Chairperson, we have covered most of the areas. Certainly, if the committee wants to further engage on other areas, we are more than willing to again appear before the committee. Let me hand over back to you.
Thank you very much, Liz. Thank you, your team. Thorough work done. Don't listen to my tantrums on time spent. I always believe in shorter time, but it was not a wasted time. I agree with the members. Thank you very much. See you another time. Have a safe trip wherever you are, or a safe stay. Social distance, wash hands, and so on. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chairperson, yeah. Thanks very much. Do you want us to leave the meeting so that you continue with the AG session?
No, it doesn't matter. Okay, you can stay because your issues are related. You can stay if you so want.
Okay. No problem. Thanks very much for that clarity. Thank you.
Elsa B, do you want me to say something or are we done?
Oh, I apologize. I thought you had connectivity problems, Prof. Mukadi. Do you still want to add something?
Oh, no. It was a matter that related to Honorable Iris, who raised the issue of the how we can ensure that ECDs, non-formal ECDs, are actually supported so that they can register. I think Sasha had covered that point in the earlier presentation. It is just that maybe it needed to be re-emphasized that unless we convert the national integration ECD policy that was initiated in 2015 into legislation, that problem would continue to persist and complicated by lack of implementation and lack of funding. So if the committee could really assist us in ensuring that that policy is turned into legislation, that's really how we can ensure that we do respond comprehensively to such a critical issue which had been raised by the honourable member. Thank you. Sorry, Chair, that I came at the tail end.
Thank you, Prof. Thank you very much. That remains useful. Honourable member, can we take 4 to 5 minutes, just a break, and then maybe we start at, I would say, 11:05. Do you agree, honourable members?
Yes, Chair, we agree.
Yes, 11:05, let the AG get ready. Thank you very much, Liz, Prof, your team, Tando, Sasha, all of you guys. But you can stay because there's a lot of relationship between the things you said and what the AG is going to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.